This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
It's good. Life is good. Cardinals beat the Cubs 2 out of 3. I got Chris Ronji. I got Greg Amsinger. I got Mike Claiborne. I don't know that I could ask for much more. Ollie Marmel, Bernie Miklas tomorrow. It's going to be a good week for the show. How you doing, Ronj?
Buddy, you're exactly right. That's about as well as you could have hoped for the weekend series to go, especially considering both teams weren't playing their best baseball coming in. And it had that... You know, you get that feeling like, oh, man, don't let this be that series where the Cubs start to get right. And they didn't. It was a really good weekend at Busch.
Yeah. I thought one of the more impressive moments of the weekend was actually PCA's home run into the tarps off section.
We talked about that at the last show. And it's like, hey, I can separate my fandom. Mm-hmm. And I can appreciate when something really cool happened, even if it's against my team. And I brought up the whole... Aaron Rodgers running the ball into the end zone at Soldier Field a few years ago and yelling at the crowd, I still own you, because he did. He owned the Bears. And I said, you know what? I hate this guy, but I got to give it to him because he does. And that PCA moment felt a lot like that to me.
No, it sure
did. Not that he owns the Cardinals. It's just you've got these overrated chants happening, and he's like, oh, overrated? How about this?
Yeah, I remember Daryl Strawberry hitting one off the clock, I do believe, at Busch Stadium, and I was like, dang. We did not like the Mets, but wow. That was awesome. And, I was a freshman at Indiana and wrapped up in IU basketball. That place is awesome. And Glenn Robinson, the big dog, came in for Purdue and dropped, I think, 40 on us. And I'm like, okay, that guy's amazing. On and on it goes. Like, you appreciate the other side. PCA, what he did, and again, I think if you're on the Cardinals side of things like we are, you – don't pull for that guy. And he deposited one right into the section. Like, that's about as impressive as it gets in terms of with them chanting overrated at you. That was pretty great. Otherwise.
And Tom, back me up on this real quick here, okay? When we were kids in the 80s growing up, okay, I went away to college and went to Illinois State, and it's a lot of Chicago people go there and central Illinois and that kind of thing. And so... there weren't a ton of Cardinals fans where I went to school. I mean, there were, but it was mostly Cubs, White Sox, that kind of thing. And when I would, and this is in the 90s, and when I would tell people that, I'm not kidding, guys, if you asked somebody in St. Louis at that time, if the Cardinals don't win a World Series, who would you like to see win it? I think a lot of people would say the Cubs. It was the Mets we hated, and we hated the Braves. Back me up on this, right?
Yes.
It wasn't the Cubs was not a heated rivalry, I thought, until the La Russa, Dusty Baker.
We're talking
days.
80s. Braves were not. 80s. Braves didn't feel.
Braves in the 90s.
Yeah, I didn't feel that. Braves in the 90s, yeah.
Yes.
Because they were good. You know, it's always because they're good. I mean, the Mets in the 80s were
the rivalry.
Was the team. Yep. And then when the Cubs started getting good, that sparked the rivalry back up. But the Cubs in the early 2000s with Dusty Baker, that was a good team. And there was a lot of hatred reborn there. Like 98, Maguire Sosa, it was you're going to go out and drink beers with your Cubs friends. After the game, it was a rivalry, but we were all celebrating the return of baseball together. I think when the Cubs got good in the early 2000s, that turned. And certainly when the Cubs got good and beat the Cardinals in the division series in 15, which Anthony Rizzo referred to last night on the NBC broadcast, in the pregame, he's absolutely right. That right there was the Cubs organization saying, it's our time now. And they respected the Cardinals and all that they meant. But once they slayed the dragon, then it sort of opened the door for them. They won the World Series in 2016. And that was the downfall, I felt, of Cardinals ownership and their own fan base. The fan base for the Cardinals got very irritated by that.
Yep.
And you didn't make the playoffs in 16, 17, 18. And that really ticked them off that the Cubs were good and the Cardinals were not. And that really got that rivalry going again. I told you that before the Cubs won it in 16, I told you this story a couple of times, I think, that one of my friends, we asked him, He's a huge Cardinals fan and did not like the Cubs and said, you know, I won't go to Wrigley because I don't like being around all those Cubs fans. And so we said, how about this? If this was before 16, we said, if the Cardinals just won the World Series in 11, right? He said, yep. We said, if we could guarantee you for the rest of your life that the Cardinals will never win another World Series, but also the Cubs will never win one, would you take that? And he said, in a heartbeat.
Wait, he's a Cardinals fan?
He's a Cardinals fan.
So that's...
He said, I would take that in a heartbeat. And I was like, wow, that is aggressive.
Spite rooting. Yeah. That is so fascinating because, you know, that feels like a lot of White Sox fans.
Yeah.
Because Sox fans hate the Cubs, it seems like, more than they love their own team.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting there. They're very, very jealous of that whole thing.
PCA was mouthing off one of those...
That's what he does.
Yeah. And how about the White Sox, by the way? They have a better record than the Cubs right now.
I can't believe they're playing as well as they're playing. That's, I don't know how long they're going to keep that up, but yeah, they're, for the time being, they are looking pretty good. I think they've got the second best record in the AL. The American League is not particularly strong right now, not this year. Because I'm looking at the standings right now, actually. Their wild card teams are, let's see, the second wild card, or the third wild card is 2 games under 500.
Yeah.
So when I said the White Sox have the second best record, it's the second best wild card record behind the Yankees. And the Blue Jays are 29-31, and they've got the third wild card.
How about this one? Here is the top 10 salaries and payrolls in Major League Baseball. I should say top 10 payrolls. Number one is the Mets. They're not good. They are 7 games under 500. Number two, the Dodgers, and that's without Ohtani's salary because, remember, it's deferred. Mm-hmm. But they're good. The Yankees are good. They're three. The Blue Jays are under 500. Therefore, the Phillies are a game over 500. They're starting to come on. They're five. Braves, obviously, are great. They're six. The Astros are the seventh highest payroll in baseball. They're 7 games under. The Cubs are eight. The Padres are nine. And the Tigers, who might well be one of the worst teams in all of baseball right now, 16 games under 500, are the 10th highest payroll. Where are the Cardinals, you ask? 26th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is going to be an interesting thing to watch play out in a year where the labor negotiations will be going down because the owners want a cap and a floor. The players don't want a cap at all. There's going to be a lot of talking about high payroll teams, and the disparity is obvious in baseball. I don't know. Looking at this,
honestly,
that's not necessarily always the case.
For salary cap, for people who want the salary cap, the way it is right now doesn't help that argument.
No, it doesn't.
And that's maybe to the detriment of the sport. And I'm starting to soften on the idea of maybe there should be some kind of cap and a floor in baseball, some kind of salary structure system. Because I have long been an advocate for, hey, let the players make whatever they can make. And if teams are willing to spend and spend and spend, let them spend, because that kind of forces other teams to have to match them, or at least try to. But the, you know, I am open to the idea of coming around on a salary cap here. However, a year like this, when the top teams aren't necessarily the best, it doesn't help the argument that they need to have the payroll in order to compete.
How about this before we take a break? Here's the bottom half of the payroll. The following teams all have winning records. Cincinnati at 19. This is in terms of ranking, in terms of payroll. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee, 20th.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, 23rd. Tampa Bay, 24th. St. Louis, 26th. Washington, 27th. White Sox, 28th. Cleveland, 29th. Mm-hmm. With an $81 million payroll. That's absolutely nuts.
Tampa, Cleveland, and Milwaukee all lead their divisions, and you're talking about three of the lowest payroll teams in the sport. And all three of them lead half of the divisions in baseball.
Pretty crazy. When we come back, we'll talk to MLB Network's Greg Amsinger about it all. Mike Claiborne, Cardinals broadcaster, will be with us as well. That's after the 12:30 weather, and we take you up to 1 o'clock with the Gas House Gang. With the Cardinals winning the series against the Cubs, they got the Rangers tonight. Jacob DeGrom against Michael McGreevy. That one starts at 6:45 right here on KMO.
Payoff pitch, a big pitch coming up for Dobbins to Swanson. The 3-2 delivery, swing and a miss. He struck him out. Dobbins strikes out Swanson with two runners in scoring position.
Everything felt good, and it was just nice to kind of feel the adrenaline in the bush.
I bet it did. Hunter Dobbins, what a performance last night. 3 2/3 to help the Cardinals to victory. 5-1 over the Cubs. He gets his first major league save. That one worked exactly according to plan. The Cardinals went with Matthew Liberatore, but they had called up Hunter Dobbins, and the whole reason was to get their bullpen rested, and it worked exactly as they wanted. They went with 85 pitches for Libby. They turned it over to another starter, Hunter Dobbins. He went the rest of the way, and the Cardinals win a ball game. And the key there, Greg Amsinger of MLB Network, is that they put up a crooked number. They had a 5-0 lead on that Cubs team, and they held on for a 5-1 win. That was a very impressive win for Ollie Marmol, Heim Bloom, and the Cardinals yesterday.
Tom, I'm going to tell you straight up. I think it was the biggest win of the year. I'm not overselling it. It was on national television. Albert Pujols is in the booth. Bob Costas, Ozzie Smith down on the field. National attention on this series. Going into it on Friday on the national pregame show, I said this was the biggest series of the season for the Cardinals. If the Cubs, who were playing better baseball, waltzed into St. Louis and swept the Cardinals, when the Cardinals had lost 4 in a row, 7 of 9, they would make a statement nationally that the Cardinals were what a lot of people thought they were, a rebuilding young organization that wasn't ready to win right now. But for the Cardinals to win the series and to do it that way, to have a plan in place, not exhaust their bullpen pieces to win the rubber match, to do everything that they didn't have to do, everything they needed to. You didn't need to see Riley O'Brien come out for 2 innings or JoJo Romero out there again. To stick to the plan and believe it would work to win the third game of this series, I really truly believe the biggest win of the year, and could propel the Cardinals into eventually being buyers at the deadline.
Greg, how about this? Let me back up and just look at the rivalry as it sits. Obviously, if you grew up a Cardinals fan or a Cubs fan, you think this is the best rivalry in baseball. How do you think people see it nationally, though?
Nationally, I think they recognize the history behind it. I mean, the oldest rivalry there is. I think locally, it's viewed differently at the moment. In Chicago, Cub fans are more fixated with the Brewers than people in St. Louis actually understand. You'll hear them say that that's their new rival. It's not the Cardinals, because the Cardinals haven't been a relevant force in the NL Central for the past couple of seasons. So from that perspective, they're trying to like step on the little brother and go, you're not even relevant anymore. I think there's an awakening to what this rivalry can be and what it's going to be down the road, because what it looks like is that the St. Louis Cardinals are putting together a core of young players that are maturing at the same time that's going to make them a force to be reckoned with for the Cubs for quite a long time. The Cardinals haven't dabbled yet in free agency. They have not dabbled in the modern Carlos Beltran piece or the modern Lance Berkman piece that they're going to add to this young core, whereas the Chicago Cubs have already been doing it. You're going to see them do that again big time at the deadline. I think they're going to be in play for Scooble, Sandy Alcantara, Freddie Peralta. They're going to try to get better at the deadline. So they're spending money. Cardinals are not. And here we are. It looks like these two teams are evenly matched, which is a testament to the young players that they've developed in the system in St. Louis.
It's June 1st. Cardinals are in second place in the NL Central. There's no reason to believe that they're going to go backwards. They continue to show that they are improving in several areas. So here's the question. What are they going to do? If they're in the playoff race at the trade deadline, what do you envision? We're a ways away from that now. We're 2 months away, but what do you envision?
I envision the Cardinals and Heim Bloom sticking to their plan which is building, not rebuilding, building with this youth movement that they have, and they truly believe in it. They're all pulling on the same side of the rope. Now, what I'll say is this. If they are playing great baseball at the deadline, I would not be shocked at all to take advantage of the momentum and the excitement and fans coming back to the ballpark, and you got tarps off. And it, I could see the acquisition of a frontline starter. I could see the St. Louis Cardinals acquiring someone that they believe could be a game one guy. And I wouldn't have said that 3 weeks ago. But as I look at the landscape of the National League, the Cardinals have the continuity in their starting lineup. They have the continuity in roles in their bullpen. And I like the upside of the rotation. I just don't believe, even though the strikeouts are up, they're striking more people out. I just don't believe it's enough swing and miss to really make a major dent. When you look at what the Milwaukee Brewers have with Harrison and Mizorowski, when you look at what the Cincinnati Reds have in Burns, who's going again today, and this kid's unbelievable to watch. Obviously, the Dodgers are laced with swing and miss. I could see the Cardinals altering their plans a bit and acquiring a frontline starter at the deadline.
What do you – so we're talking here about the rotation and pitching, and you've got a lot of younger up-and-coming starters. How do you view the Cardinals' offense overall? We've spent a lot of time talking about J.J. and obviously Jordan Walker, who seems to be breaking out for good. Or at least that's what we hope is happening here. But how do you see this offense as a whole?
I think it's only getting better. Mason Wynn hasn't started hitting yet. I think Nolan Gorman's going to catch a hot streak, and he's one of those unique talents, very similar to Jordan Walker, that if he gets hot, that's the kind of slug that can carry a team for a stretch. It's so funny. Before the season started, we were wondering, is there a player that you would give an extension to? Is there a player that the Cardinals have that you could build around? Now, legitimately, you can dream on four. There are four players that you would love to keep in St. Louis and have them grow together and become stars together. And that is the 1-4 in the lineup, Weatherholt, Herrera, Burleson, and Walker. The fact that we're saying that right now, or at least I am, is a testament to the movement, the youth movement, the coaching staff that the Cardinals have in place to let the maturation process really become a fruitful thing. And here we sit, excited about a core. Whereas we were wondering, is there even a player that you could build a core around? The core of the Cardinals is really being built in front of our eyes right now. And I think the future is insanely bright because of it.
The Cardinals have made some moves here, as they did in the Cubs series. They brought up Nelson Velazquez. Boom, he hits a home run first pitch that he sees. They bring up Jimmy Crooks. He caught the game on Saturday. They bring up Hunter Dobbins. He did what he did. We just talked about that. They're going to bring up Lars Nootbaar shortly. So these are all people with major league experience. Although Crooks is limited, they all have some major league experience. My question to you, Greg Amsinger, is who is going to get a little bit beyond that? Will it be Baez? Will it be Blaze Jordan? Who is next? I have a feeling that the Cardinals, well, I don't have a feeling. Haim told me yesterday that Jordan and Baez are clearly on their radar. They're watching them closely. Who do you see next?
I mean, would you be shocked to see Baez play center field?
Not at all.
Not at all. It seems like Victor Scott has been given a tremendous opportunity to become a regular. I have a hard time with judging a player who bats ninth every single day and go, yeah, he was given a fair shake. The Chicago Cubs were batting Pete Crow Armstrong ninth. They decided to actually commit to the talent and the upside, and now he's leading off. Now you can actually judge the talent when he's hitting first in the lineup. That stuff matters to hitters. It just does. But Baez is such a unique talent, and he's got raw power, and he's got the ability to steal a bag as well. It's not like he's just a slugger. This is an all-around five-tool guy who I think Cardinal fans who follow the farm system of their Redbirds clearly have been excited about for a while. I got a chance to do the breakout series game, spring training, and Tom and you and I were hanging out talking to watch this kid take at-bats. I was and massively impressed. That's just one game. I think eventually he's the next one. And I don't know if there's been a more hyped slugging position player prospect, J.J. Weatherholt, on pace for 27 home runs right now. We love that. I think that's ahead of schedule. But I think this is the closest thing to the way we were discussing Jordan Walker when Jordan Walker broke in to the big leagues. Baez, to me, is part of the fabric, the additional core. And I would throw Crooks into that as well. I know they've got other young catchers that they're very excited about, but I'm a big Jimmy Crooks fan. I love his swing. And to me, his comp is Brian McCann. That's my comp for Jimmy Crooks. So it's the core that I speak of is only about to expand. So, yeah, Baez is the guy for me.
What about putting that up against Walker? And you know what the discussion has been over the last year and a half or so, that maybe the Cardinals brought him up too quickly. And he still does strike out a lot. And when it's not going well, he's really striking out. And the percentage for Baez is pretty high, too. So how careful should they be? I know they're different players, so every player is going to respond differently when they get promoted. But do you think that's in their minds in any way as they contemplate that?
It's a good question, because you can't have too many players that are the same type of hitter, right? You can have a Jordan Walker, who I don't want to say feast or famine when your batting average is around 300. He's had a much better approach this year. His chase rate's down significantly. But yes, there's a lot of swing and miss there. You can't have four of those guys stacked together. You just can't. The way Ivan Herrera is hitting right now is just outstanding. His last 13 games, he just looks like so comfortable at the plate. We know what J.J. Weatherholt has been doing all year long. Last 10 games, he's hitting over 300. Alec Burleson's one of the best bad ball hitters in baseball that no one talks about. He can hit a pitch up by his chin. Lefties rarely do that. So he's different. It looks like they've acquired players that allow them to have two or three of those feast or famine-esque type of hitters. So I hear you. There are certain lineups. I don't think Baez would be a good fit in the Athletics lineup right now, where there's so much swing and miss and so much slugging upside. They'd just be another guy and a team that could easily be no hit outside of Nick Kurtz. I think the Cardinals with Mason Wynn, who makes a lot of contact, look up and down the lineup. I think there's space for another guy that profiles with high upside with some swing and miss like Baez.
It's getting exciting around here. Greg, we had Budweiser's one of our sponsors, so I should mention that we had a big event Thursday at Anheuser-Busch. Matt Adams, Ozzie Smith, Al Hrabowski joined me for a roundtable, and the reason I bring it up is the place was packed. I mean, fans are engaged. They're excited. It was the preview of Cards Cubs weekend, but also telling some stories. I just love this. I wanted to ask you, not to put you on the spot, but do you have anything in the works? I know you did a big Ollie Heim event at Lindenwood. Are you thinking about bringing something back?
I am, yes. I've got a marquee guest that I am trying to coordinate dates with to come back to Lindenwood University and do what I call the Amsinger Series. And I want to do this twice a year, but I have a great guest that I think Cardinal fans would absolutely love. It's really just working out the details of his schedule to get that aligned with the theater there at Lindenwood University, the Scheidegger Center, so we can make that happen again. But I really do want to help the groundswell behind this organization that I just truly believe in the direction of it, Tom. So I just love Heim Bloom and what he's doing. And Ali Marmol's the right guy for the job. And all the young players that they're committing to, guys that are in the lineup every single day. It's the old school way of Cardinal baseball. I just like the vision. So anything I can do to help create excitement and have another event for fans to come enjoy, you better believe I'm going to be put my Cardinal cap on for that.
We appreciate that, man. Everything that you do for us, and thank you for being on the show. Have a great show today on MLB Network. I know you will.
All right, you guys are the best. We'll do it again next week.
Now, the Cardinals Conversation on KMOX. Sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Albert Pujols, the Cardinals legend, introduced. Big ovation for Albert when he was introduced as part of the NBC broadcast. That happened on Sunday night with Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman, the Gas House Gang. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. And joining us, there was so much going on this weekend. No better person to bring in to tell a few stories and observations than Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne, who is right in the middle of all of it. Our outstanding radio team of John Rooney, Ricky Horton, Mike Claiborne, and Jim Jackson were running the show. Hi, Claibs.
How are you?
Doing great. What a weekend that was. I mean, the baseball, one thing, but having all the people that we had in the house. I mean, Simone Biles was there on Friday, for goodness sakes. Yeah.
Jonathan Owens.
You know, and Jonathan Owens. You got Costas and Pujols and Rizzo and Ozzy and all these people. Roboski's taking his shirt off. I mean, it was just it was an unbelievable weekend.
We had Olympian Joy Dunn, who was on his hockey team. She was a gold medalist. She was in the house, and we had a bunch of Cardinal alums. Yeah, it was a fun weekend. And, you know, I thought the fans really made the difference. I mean, this was really an electric event. I know we had Cub fans in town. They come in, they look to have a good time, and we let them win one game. And it was just a different environment, man. It was something that we used to see, and I think it's starting to come back, and hopefully we'll pick up where we left off tonight with Texas.
Talk so much, Klabes, about this tarps off thing, and speaking of the crowd, and it's continuing. It's continuing past a rough patch of games and a road trip where they were gone. So you're afraid that, you know, maybe momentum dies a little bit. And I suppose it being the Cubs, you know, there's automatic interest, and you know people are going to come out to the ballpark, so that helps. But I'm really impressed with the way Cardinals fans have kept this thing going.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. And, you know, I think they've been looking for something to rally around. I mean, the team is growing. It's a young team. And, you know, every night somebody's doing something different to help win a game. But, you know, fans are trying to find a way to get more engaged, and this couldn't have come at a better time. You know, I think when Ollie reached out and made it a point as far as what he saw, it kind of validated everybody else and said, well, if Ollie likes it, why shouldn't we jump on board with it? And the players have embraced it. And now we're hearing that it's taking place in other cities as well. Yep. And then they took their act on the road. They were in Milwaukee cutting up like that. So, I mean, it's a fun thing for everybody. You know, the wins help, don't get me wrong. And I thought this weekend was cool because we had a couple of guys who made contributions. You know, you think about what Velasquez did on Friday night with the big home run to tie the ball game. And then last night, Hunter Dobbins, who was a guy that was in Memphis 24 hours before last night. He was scheduled to pitch yesterday. He came in and gave the Cardinals three huge innings last night, three and a third huge innings last night to save the bullpen. And that's what you need. You're going to need guys that, while you may not think a lot of them on the roster because they didn't start the season here, they're going to have an impact, and we saw it this weekend.
You're right, Klabes. And Liberatore with his five and a third, you know, Pallante got beat early. Leahy got pulled early, so it was important for Libby to show something, and he did. In fact, he's done it twice now, because remember, he got jumped by the Brewers and then ended up striking out 10. Who's the best starter in this rotation? I don't know. We'll find out by the end of the year, but Matthew Liberatore was the opening day starter, and he sure has looked like it the last two starts.
Well, he has, but I'm going to throw another name in that discussion, and we're going to see him tonight. Michael McGreevy has given you a chance virtually every night he's been out there this year. You know, he's not a guy that overpowers you. He doesn't overwhelm me with 98-mile-an-hour stuff. But, man, he knows how to pitch, and that's been one of the keys. And, you know, I think he's been one of the mainstays. You look at his ERA, I mean, he's, I think, top 10 at one point. And so, you know, again, every night there's somebody that's doing something different to help the ball club.
And one thing that has happened here, we've seen the roster change a little bit, and Jimmy Crooks is now up with them. And, you know, we'll see how long this is going to go on. But, you know, Cardinals fans have been looking forward to seeing him, and they're looking forward to seeing Baez and that sort of thing. So there is youth that is coming this way. It's already a young team, and more of it is on the way, Klabes.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, I think they want to be patient about when they bring players up. And let's throw Lars Nootbaar in the equation. I wouldn't be surprised to see him before the end of the weekend. So he's an added value, we hope, that's going to help to lengthen the lineup. And that's what the lineup needs. You know, lineup struggle here, the bottom six, on the bottom three for sure. And if you can get another bat in there to just lengthen that lineup a little bit more, it just gives you so many more opportunities. So I think subtle help is on the way. We just have to be patient and watch it grow. But, you know, I'm having fun with it, and I think most fans who show up to the park are pleasantly surprised in what they see.
Yeah, you really look forward to going to the ballpark every night with this club. It's Michael McGreevy against Jacob DeGrom tonight. Boy, do I love McGreevy. I mean, that's a heck of a matchup, and I love McGreevy in this matchup. Like, he won't be worried about it. He has looked like a major league starter ever since he put on that uniform. The player I wanted to ask you about, Claves, we talk about him so much, is Nolan Gorman. And I had Heim Bloom on yesterday, and he said, look, you know, we see it and we understand he's got some things to work through, but he indicated, Claves, that they're going to let Gorman work his way through it, and they're not going to just like send him out of here. I mean, if he's going to lose his job, he pretty much said it's going to be because somebody knocked him out of it and became the best nine players on the field. It's a competition thing, and that's what they invite.
Yeah, it is. I throw in the fact that you don't have someone in the minors that can play third base at a big league level every day. So it's Nolan's to lose at this point, and he's just got to just figure it out. I mean, we saw with Jordan Walker, we've seen with other players that, you know, sometimes that light switches on, and next thing you know, you're having some consistency, because I think we all want to obviously see him do well, and there's a spot for him. And I think that the flashlight's now on him on when can he click, and if he can get it going, I mean, who's to say how far this team can go, but it's got to start with him, and how he gets it done, only Nolan Gorman knows.
All right, Claves, we got through this stretch that we talked about, all these National League Central games. We did have the rain out, but Cardinals ended up winning 4 of those games. They lost 7 of them. How do you feel about this? And does anything change for you the way you see the division?
It's a good division. Everybody can pitch a little bit. And that's the one thing that I noticed. And, you know, a little disappointing that we couldn't have done better during that stretch, but it's not the only stretch we're going to run across. I think we learn from it. I think we learn what we need, and I think we learn what we need to do in order to be better in executing certain things. And if you can learn from that, because as we mentioned, the season, hey, listen, we're not even a flag day yet. So we had time to get this thing figured out.
I was just going to say.
I think that we learned a lot about ourselves, and I thought one of the best learning processes took place yesterday, because Saturday night, in my opinion, was not a good night. I didn't think we played well. I didn't think there was focus. I didn't think there was execution. It was a sloppy game. Hadn't seen one like that since spring training. And I was wondering how they were going to respond, and they did in kind last night, you know, coming out, scoring runs early, also playing good, solid defense, and the pitching was there. So they learned from the night before, and we'll see where it takes them this evening.
I was just going to say, 13 days to Flag Day, one of my favorite days on the baseball calendar. Mike Claiborne, one last thing, and that is we heard the ovation for Albert Pujols. We know how well-respected he is. There's another one in the house tonight. Skip Schumacher is about as loved a Cardinal as we've seen in the last few decades. What is it about Skip that everybody loves, Claves?
Just how he carries himself, how he worked as a player. I have him down as one of my 5 favorite all-time Cardinals that I've covered, period. Just how, what a pro he was, and just the little things he was able to do to make himself a viable player. He's shown that he can manage. If you can be manager of the year managing the Marlins, you can manage anywhere. And now he's got a team in Texas with some good talent, and he's trying to grow that. He and Chris Young, their president of baseball operations, right guy for the right situation. And just when I think of Skip Schumacher, I think of class. That's the best way to describe him.
Mike Claiborne, appreciate you. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. Have a great time tonight at the ballpark.
I certainly intend to. See you guys soon.
See you. Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne. Cards and Rangers tonight, 6:45 for our radio broadcast. We'll be back in just a moment with Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman, the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Ooh, there was a blockbuster trade in the NFL. Oh, boy. We'll get to that and any other sports we want to touch on, plus baseball. We're not done talking Cardinals. We'll get to your comments. We haven't done that yet. Your comments on YouTube, on Facebook, on X, on our text line maybe even, back after this.
Now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Salinke Heating and Cooling and by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Well, I teased this, so it is a monster trade. I mean, I would say this is a seismic trade if you're an NFL fan. Myles Garrett is going to the Los Angeles Rams from the Browns for Jared Verse and a first-round pick. Verse was a very good player for the Rams who was included in the deal, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. I was just watching a video that Adam did moments ago. That was really what made the deal, that the Rams had been pursuing Garrett forever. I mean, they were on it when they reworked the deal in Cleveland, and now Myles Garrett is a Ram. Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, I'll say this. I liked the Browns for a while. I'm so glad I'm a Raiders fan now, and the Garrett is out of there. I have no reason to pull for Cleveland. He's a freak, an amazing athlete and player.
Yeah, it's a little unfair, isn't it? The Rams have Aaron Donald for so long, and now they get another pass rusher who's this good. Yeah. And the man is otherworldly, too. It's just, come on, man.
Yeah. That's
you know what I mean? Yep. It's just, anytime anything good happens for the Rams, it's a real kick in the teeth.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. It really does hurt. But I care less about what they're out. I don't really pay too close attention to what the Rams are doing as good as they are.
I do like Myles Garrett a lot.
Yeah.
I saw that Russell Wilson he's done. He's done being a quarterback. He's going to go be an analyst now.
Okay. He could actually be pretty good at that, I think.
Well, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for him.
Who do you think wins? Who's the Super Bowl favorite, you think, right now?
Do you want me to be logical?
Mm-hmm. I know. I know if you're not, you're going to say the Bears. But if we're being realistic.
I'm still giving it to Buffalo, I think. Yeah. At some point, it's got to happen for them, I think.
You would think at some point. The favorite to win the World Series right now, a little more complicated, because I will say the Braves, as good as they are at 40-20, watch out for the Phillies.
Yeah, yeah. I would still, honestly, they're 9.5 games out of first place right now, Philadelphia is. So, I mean, they could make a run and take that division back. So I think you're right about the Braves not believing in them so much. But at minimum, they make it as a wild card. Or I could see them getting in as a wild card, and then I'd be really afraid of what they do.
Yeah, Zachary, by the way, doesn't understand that it's not crazy that I'm a Raiders fan. I'm doing it for Fernando Mendoza.
Oh, yeah.
You know, come on, man. It's the no-brainer. Anyway,
everybody
go ahead.
Knows it. Come on, Zachary. You got to be watching, paying attention. Well, Zachary is watching on YouTube. But
I know. I do like Zachary. I like to give him some crap. We have all kinds of comments here, but there was a lot of it that just got overwhelmed by somebody who doesn't want Ollie Marmol as a manager. It's so weird. Still, the Knicks.
We're still doing this? Hold on a second.
The Knicks are going to beat the Spurs. They're going to win the NBA title. That's my pick there. Carolina against Vegas will be fun. I think Carolina pulls it out as the top team in the East, but we'll see.
Let's get back to this Oliver Marmol
thing. Yeah, we got a minute. Go ahead.
And by the way, I am going to ask him tomorrow how he plans to collect that house from Anthony Rizzo.
We're going to play that audio.
Yeah, that Rizzo owes him. But we're still doing this about Ollie. He's got this team overperforming. And if you want to make the argument that managers matter that much, you cannot argue with the results right now, because this team is doing better than it should be doing right now.
Yes, and I think the Ollie detractors have gone either silent or they flipped, because there are very few right now that I'm hearing. I think people are on board.
Yeah.
We will be back tomorrow with Oliver Marmol, the Cardinals manager. Can't wait for that. And Bernie Miklas. With Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Thanks for joining us on the Gas House Gang.
Monday.
Wax.